So a lot of people ask me all the time, how is it that you do what you do being in your 40s? Well, it's a lot of hard work, but honestly, I got a lot of help. I've been going to Triple Threat Performance for my physical therapy needs for a few years now. I keep tearing this body down and they keep putting me back together again. And just recently, I joined their strength and conditioning program. And really, honestly, I don't think the mountains stand a chance this year. I feel stronger. I feel more flexible. I feel like I could go longer than I've ever had before in the past. So if you are in the Phoenix area and this sounds like something you might need or you want to up your game, check out Triple Threat Performance. That's ttpaz.com. ttpaz.com. Hey, I also want to give props to the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. You heard me say it a million times. They're a game changer. And I'm not just saying it's not just lip service. They really are. They do what they're intended to do. And that is make a guy, woolly mammoth like myself, sound like a cat coming through the woods. And really just they're game changers. I think everybody should own a pair. It should be in your arsenal of weapons. And there is no other comparison out there. They're easy to put on, lightweight, easy to carry around with you. Don't take up a whole lot of weight and room in your backpack. It's almost foolish not to own a pair. So go check them out, Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. So I had the opportunity to have a really candid conversation with a good friend of mine, Marlon Holden. We got on the line and we were just talking a little bit before we were going to do the podcast. And that little bit of talking turned into like an hour worth of conversation before we actually started talking about the things that I wanted to ask him for the podcast. And about halfway through that, I just realized like it was such a good conversation that I needed to hit the record button. So it's an interesting podcast, a little different than what I normally do. And I think you'll enjoy it.
Yo, Flip.
Whoops. Sorry, okay. Guys. Yeah.
I shoot the buck and the buck rears up and starts running down the drainage and he's just like, oh my God, Dad, you shot it. You know, we got it. And I'm like, yeah, dude, we got him. And the buck runs down a few hundred yards. We don't hear anything and then we wait. And, you know, candidly, the kid's better at tracking than I am.
They're lower to the ground.
He was finding just the tiniest little drops. And after I showed him what to look for, he was like on point. But I don't know, just, you know, the whole process, that's kind of almost like the next step.
Yeah, I was going to say, man.
Even if my son decides that, you know, he isn't a hunter, he isn't an outdoorsman, I want him to know how to be connected to who we are. In that, I, as much as I don't want to needlessly kill,
right,
I also don't want to be so disconnected to think that, you know, I'm not a taker. Mm-hmm. You know, I take resources from this earth to survive.
Right.
And there's no probability of that not happening so long as there's air in my lungs and I'm walking this earth as a human being, as a part of this earth. I'm going to be consuming things and it's necessary. And so long as I'm going to eat meat, I think that then that necessitates my need to be a part of that cycle and not shun it as if I don't need to just because I can go buy it.
Right.
So I still have that desire, like, you know, to provide for the table, to be a part of the process, to understand who it is that I am and that we are, and make sure that it's not only a legacy that's preserved, respected, and continues. So I you know,
mm-hmm.
there's that side, right? So it goes back to full swing where, you know, we talked about how it's like hard to just kill something, which it's really hard to just kill something. I can't just kill something. It has to be purpose driven to some point. And I do still see the validity in controlling predators. I
Right.
see the validity of controlling wild mount like mountain lions and coyotes and bears, and I think that there's a necessity for management,
Yeah.
especially wolves now. I mean, that's
Right.
like a kind of huge thing. But things have just been changing from this from the respect that I care about everything so much more. I mean,
It's crazy, right?
even you, like, I can't even, we don't even really do anything together, but, I was thinking about my buddy that just passed,
Yeah.
just over this weekend, that day before yesterday. I don't want to experience loss of the people that I love and care about. I've had too much
Oh,
interaction with you, and as I get older, I care about the things that happen in life so much more, so much deeper. Family means everything, children mean everything. Money means less, time means more. Experiences of enrichment are much more important. And so, like some of the younger viewers and listeners, I don't know how interested they're going to be in hearing the ramblings of a 30-something-year-old man say, the hunt isn't the same as it was when I was 20.
No,
Twenty
it's and
seven
it's
when
not,
I
and it's and it's
started.
always changing, and it's always changing, man. Like, you've heard of that spectrum, the was it the five stages of a hunter? There's like, I forgot where it starts. It's limiting out. Oh man, I'll have to look it up. But the last one is supposed to be sportsman. And you're supposed to evolve technically. What, or not? You're supposed to, but most hunters will start at point A, and they go from whatever it is, limiting out to trophy hunter to da 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 da, whatever. And then the last one is sportsman work, where you seem to be at right now. And you're supposed to evolve as you get older through this. I have slid back and forth on that scale. I don't know how many times in my life. It's crazy because like there's years that have gone by that I'm like sportsman, and then there's years that I go slide back here, and it's like, and maybe it has to do with the fact of being in the industry and constantly being under scrutiny, and then constantly also being influenced, because you're constantly taking in, media and whatever, and you're like, I don't know, it makes you change your mind about things. But like I said, ever since I, right about 39, 40 years old, I like the, I one, I feel way more remorseful when I shoot something than I ever had, and I always did. I always like there was always a sense of me that was like, that had a little internal battle with it. But I also like now, like I totally like I don't do small game anymore because I don't eat it. I don't enjoy rabbits. I'm not a big quail fan. I mean, sir, if it's done right, which okay, I'll eat it. But like doves, stuff like that, so I don't hunt them. I won't shoot them. And like we'll go, I'll go with my I got a couple of guys that work for me in the outfitting business, and they're like in their 20s, or so. Actually, one of them's even not even 20, he's 19, and we'll see a rabbit on the side of the road, and they just want to shoot it with the bow, like like, and I'm they're like, oh come on man, shoot it. Oh, what do you, you can't shoot it, you think you're not going to hit it. I'm like, dude, I can hit it. I know I can hit it. It's not the problem hitting it, it's just, what's the purpose? Just to see it die? Like I don't like it doesn't compute with me. So like you said, with the coyotes and stuff like that, there's like this been this really internal battle with me. Like I really, and where it really hit home is last or earlier, was it this year? Yeah, it was really early this year. I, oh no, I'm sorry, it was last year, because early this year wouldn't make sense timeline wise. It was in July. I didn't know it was a pup until I shot it. Came running in, when you shoot them with a bow, it's fast and furious. They just come running. It's like a drive-by shooting, And you just coyote, drawback, shoot, you know? And I shot it and I was like, fuck, I just shot a damn pup. And like that ruined me, man, for a while. Like I had some. And then earlier this year, I had one that did this like crazy death cry, and I was like, what are you doing? And it took me a while. Like, so now it's like I'm not just, I don't just go out every day. I don't just go like, there's got to be a purpose. Like, I'm going to where I'm going to hunt deer, and I only take one or two, and I kind of like, I look at it more management wise than I do. That I did in the past, where it was just like, oh, I just want to, shoot a coyote, whatever. But the like deer and stuff like that, I'm eating it or that stuff like that doesn't have the same effect of me as something that doesn't have an immediate purpose, So, but.
This whole thing, hits home with a great purpose. I read the email that you had sent over before we started this, and it's I understand its purpose. Its purpose is, truthfully, I mean, there's not a lot of, I guess nowadays there's a lot of good resources to draw from. But there's not a lot of resources to draw from that, and this is just my humble opinion. I could be way off base, but not a lot of resources to draw from where you're getting kind of like qualified information, viable, real tangible information. There's so many people saturating this space that just want to be a part of it somehow. That it gets diluted with
Cheerleaders.
it gets diluted it gets I'm trying to be articulate enough to not say something that
I know, but.
full or but I mean the fact of the matter is it's saturated with a bunch of people that think they know but they don't know yet. They want to know, and they're chasing more of the money. They're chasing the name that's backing them. And candidly, there's a ton of people out there that have a ton of money following them or sponsors or whatever that really haven't learned behavior in the field. And if you go out there and hunt with them, it's very apparent. But as far as an industry perspective, the personality or whatnot may have a greater influence or impact. So I think that considering the source, a lot of the times is more important. The source of the information is more important than championing a company. And so this conversation for me was something that I kind of sat down last night and I thought about it. And I'm kind of like, I don't necessarily know that it would be the same type of conversation that would normally have about the elk screaming in the woods, and we were around, it was coming right up on behind the patch of pines that I was in. I was at full draw already, and it's kind of like, God, John, you and I have both, experienced moments such as those. Me, not so much the elk side of things, because I'm not as into it. I've called a lot of friends, called bulls in for a lot of friends. Sitting up, behind them 100 yards and calling them past the shooting lanes and stuff like that, and watching them piss on themselves and glunk and chuckle and everything right in front of me. And that's really, exciting. It's really cool. I'm just a simple, humble deer hunter, really. I think maybe one day, if I get lucky, I'll draw an elk tag, but it'll be like the one or two that I kill in my entire life, kind of. But I mean, I just think that, yeah, the thoughts coming into this were quite a bit different than the normal podcast that I've done in the past, which has predominantly been, here's what you want to do, and here's how you want to execute it, and more like a how-to. And I feel like I'm just changing a little bit in that way. I think a lot of it has to do with my little boy. I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that, I'm all in on a new business venture that I've been working on for almost a decade, and I put it into play, and like basically every single egg that I've ever had is in the basket. And
wow.
You know, I've been doing mortgage for you know, a really long time, and I've been working on this also for, and been successful at both, and just decided, you know, I don't like banking. I'm an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of having one foot in, one foot out in two worlds, I decided to go all feet in on one world, the one that I was most passionate about. But, you know, with that being said, I mean, there's a lot of contemplation that goes along with changes in life, and I'm ready to embrace whatever comes my way. And you only live once. So I have a very firm mentality of just trying to follow a path that seems to be the one that will give me the most happiness. I care very little what people think of me anymore. And you probably will feel that exact sentiment or share that sentiment with me, in that younger, we're much more impressionable. We want everybody to like us. We want to be successful and have others, you know, look up to us. And now I'm more careful about making sure that I'm kind to people. I want to give back them as much as I can. I want to make sure that I pass on some contributions with this.
Mm-hmm.
And be more respectful in the manner that I do it. There's no more of this, you know, chest pounding kind of behavior, knuckle dragging kind of behavior. It's more gratitude, respect,
yeah,
and thankfulness for, you know, I'm not going to stop eating meat. That's the fact. So as long as I'm not going to stop eating meat, I'm going to sit there and like be reverent and literally more in line with, let me fall to my knees and give thanks, you know, and mm-hmm. know that I'm no different than that animal, that just as much as that carcass lay and all the meat stripped from its bones, that one day, you know, my carcass is going to lay and the meat will fall from my bones. And let's not think that there's any difference there. So those type of things, you know, run through my head quite a bit. But the thrill of the hunt's still alive. I love it like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, without further ado, we can get back to those questions.
But I wish I would have hit the record button like way, way early. So we've been talking for a while about, Jesus, about 40 minutes, almost 30 minutes. That beginning part of our conversation, and maybe it's better off, it was just between you and I, cause it was a real like, deep moment, I guess. I don't know how to, but it was good. I think it's something that people would love to hear, but it's good that we keep it between you and me anyway. Yeah, I brought you on today because I wanted to pick your brain about hunting mule deer, and that's why, you know, that's why guys keep asking me to get you on the podcast. It only took me a year to get you back on, but yeah. Without further ado, let's.
I've been working on this massive showroom of
oh, wow,
photography.
Man. Looking
in,
good.
Laguna Beach, and we're, you know, in Southern California, and it's basically my life's work as an artist. You know, a lot of people don't know that, like, I'm very entrepreneurial, and I don't believe in working for people. I don't believe in bosses.
Yeah.
Or tell me what to do, for that matter. You're a lot the same way. You own your own business. You're entrepreneurial. And
been 25 years since I've worked for somebody.
Yeah, I mean, you got to lead your own life. So, yeah, I the last year has been me dealing with contractors, dealing with engineers, dealing with city planners and city commissioners, mayors, you know, meeting. Basically, you know, little league politician, right?
Right.
Making sure that making the right moves to be able to be in the right place. And that, that hopefully, you know, in the long run will free up a lot more time to engage in the pursuits that, you know, we love, being outdoors. It's not for the finance is great because A, we don't get any more time, right? Time off of work is, for lack of a better word, bullshit. Sorry, it's on the air, but
No, don't worry about it, Chris. Like I said, like.
if you work your whole life for 2 weeks off a year and all you got is 2 weeks off and then you go back to your job that pays you whatever it is, that minimum amount of time off leaves you with this feeling of emptiness because you're always chasing it. And that's what I, want to escape. I want to be able to, because we don't get any more time. And so it's more important to we make some money so that way if we, that's the great equalizer, right? If we want to take the time off, then you just have to have the money to be able to do it. And that's really all I care about is building a legacy great enough to where if I want to spend a month out in the woods with my kid, off we go. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
because I hate the city. I'm not a huge fan of being around people. I like the peace and quiet. And so, yeah, I'm engaging in something that hopefully will give me a lot more time and in the next few years, hopefully I'm just dropping nothing but studs.
There you go. Nice. Yeah, I worked very, very hard on building that very same thing. Especially in the last 10 plus years where I had the flexibility. Just my, like, I work and I work like an animal. And even when I'm away, sometimes I'm, fielding phone calls or whatever, but I have so much flexibility. It's like I want to like go, like you said, and just take a month and just go. Maybe not a month, but I could go for a few weeks, And there's a lot to be said about that. It's just like, yeah, am I rich? No, I'm not rich, but can I make a lot more money? Probably. But it's not that important to me to have a bunch of money. I mean, the only part of it that has a little bit of drive for me. I wish I had some money is so one that I can retire earlier and two that I have more money to leave my kids when I'm gone. But
Right.
other than that, I really don't have, I'm happy the way I live.
This circles me back to something, John. This kind of brings something up. Maybe we can do something in the future that is a two-part, because I would like to go ahead and get this off on the right track and answer the questions that truthfully that people that really are hungry for the outdoors want to know the answers to. And then maybe we can circle back at another time and purposefully do a podcast that's driven towards a higher purpose, more conservation driven, more the purpose behind why we're here. And the reason why I say that is because there's going to be a certain viewer that just really doesn't want to hear any of this metaphorical stuff about how as we get older, XYZ, it's like, okay, grandpa, go to sleep now. So I think that let's go ahead and spearhead the young killers out there that want to know, and then let's circle back with something that's what I feel is more in connection with who I am now and more meaningful with regard to stewardship and
Sounds good to me, man.
eating meat and why we eat meat and some of the things that might help some of even the people that buy my photography. They love the outdoors, but they don't necessarily understand.
Funny, yeah.
The first ones to have the leather purses, the leather car seats, the leather couches, eat steaks, but sit there and just have complete disdain for a hunt, which is a complete disconnection. I think a complete other conversation, which I think that conversation's a more important one to have. But jump in, man.
All
Let's
right. Sounds
see what
good.
you.
Well, so for those of you who don't know who I'm talking to, we're speaking with Marlon Holden, or AKA Gray Light Hunter. And we're going to talk a little bit about mule deer hunting. One of the questions I have for you, well, that it's a question that gets sent to me all the time, and I'm always curious to hear other guys who are super successful. Like, how do you approach your season? Like, holistically, how do you look at your season? What, from the day it ends to, to the day it starts again.
Anymore, I feel like I kind of started late in the hunt game. 27 years, old, and I'll be well, I'm 39 now, right? So I don't really have enough points to be dangerous in any state with drawing anything great. And candidly, I just don't draw anything great. I mean, I've been surviving off of rap hunts my entire hunt career. Or, my entire time really afield with a bow. It's been mostly vouchers or over-the-counter tags. So I don't, and candidly, none of them have ever been trophy hunts. I drew a 221 Nevada deer tag back in 12. And even though that's supposed to be a difficult tag to hunt, I only had 2 days to fill the tag. So that didn't leave. It didn't really, I mean, I was super, super busy. It didn't leave any time for me to scout or focus on it. And candidly, I went to the top of the mountain and found the biggest buck I could find that morning, and I shot it. It was, a 28 inch, 170 some inch 4 point. And I packed it back to the truck, and, came home. So
I love
I
it.
haven't really had any of those amazing tags yet. So how I approach my season is knowing that I'm not going to have a good tag, because the fact is I probably am not going to have a good tag, and just deal with it. And how I've dealt with it over the years is I've spent massive amounts of time learning for producing country, low numbers, poor levels or concentrations, poor genetics, stuff that nobody wants to go to. And I will search out like every single crevice that I can until I find who, because genetics change by drainages, genetics change by sides of ranges, availability of feed and water, and some genetic pools will stay in a certain area even though it isn't as quality, and you'll see it in the genetics. Whether it's willowy antlers, some people say, oh, well, that's just a young deer. Well, some deer don't move out of a certain area and they stay there, and the generations, that's just what you get there. So there's there's something to just grinding it out, surviving off of poor areas, and really that's what I focus on. Over the counter tags, seeking out the best gene pools in those over the counter areas and finding them, and then maximizing them. That's what I've survived on. And I think large in part, you too, right? I mean, you do some great tags, but
Yeah, I've
we all
drawn a
kind of just
few.
have to do the best that we can with, what we got. And so I just approach it with a very, open mindset of I'm gonna tackle one or two new units a year and get to learn them intimately, and I mean very intimately. I want to know where every watering hole is. I want to know where the rain fell. I want to know all about the habitat. I want to know things such as like carrying capacity. I want to know where the does summer. I want to know where the bucks summer. I want to know where they winter. And even when it comes to non-migratory areas, that still changes considerably. And so I want to know those patterns and behaviors. And I've really become a student of learning deer behavior to a very finite degree. Even sitting in, and as hunters, we all do this. We like to watch their mannerisms, the ear positioning, the body language, how they like to lay down, and how often they become alert, or what is their natural rhythm, kind of what's their biorhythm. I like to sit back and watch that. And that's one of the things that has led to the greatest successes, is really learning what makes them happy. You learn what makes them happy, and that like is the key to unlock where they're going to live, where you're going to find them, what to expect, the gene pool. I mean, I hunt some god-awful desert, I mean, the stuff that makes, the Arizona desert look like a lush jungle of beauty and feed
Right.
for days when it's, even 115 degrees, it still doesn't matter. I mean, the stuff that I'm getting into is nothing but rock and grass that looked like it died 2 or 3 years ago, and it's just really ugly country, but finding life there and maximizing it is has been really fun, a joyful process. So I approach my seasons with no expectations other than to go hunt my ass off.
There you
And
go.
I'll get my normal tags, which are all predominantly over the counter for the most part, and just see what I can find.
What are some of the things that you're doing? Like you mentioned, learning the habitat intimately and so on and so forth. What are some of the things that you're looking for when you're kind of doing, maybe even doing your cyber scouting at first? Like, when I say cyber scouting, I mean like Google Earth and whatnot. What are you looking for to achieve a starting point before you actually go and boots on the ground scout?
The first thing I look for is undersubscribed units, places where people don't go. If people don't go or put in for it, that's where you're going to find me. Because first off, I want to be alone. And I know that if most people won't go there, then the concentrations are very low. But when I looking for
I just lost you. Sorry.
when I do find what I'm looking for, generally speaking, it's bound to be good. It's bound to be, respectable, mature. May not be inches wise huge, but will truly have years and age on it. And nowadays, one of the characteristics I love the most is, because built a ton of 4 points, beautiful 4x4s with, great length, and they look awesome and everything like that. But it's kind of like, oh my God, like, where'd the cookie machine come from? All these things look the same. It's like 4x4s all over my freaking wall, my house, my garage, like 4x4s, 4x4s. And now I'm just sitting there going, oh my gosh, it has a cheater on it. Let's go, Oh, it's super heavy, or it has eye guards, or it's got a lot of mass. Now I'm like looking for something that just has some more age on it. And so the units that people don't go to, the deer densities suck, but when you do run into one, usually it's something that's pretty cool. And that's one of the things that I dig about some of these areas, is that you find very few animals, but when you find one,
They're
usually they're
usually
pretty
big.
damn. Usually, I mean, not big, but I mean,
Well, big
if
for
I can
that,
kill
for
a,
what that area, whatever.
yeah, I mean, if I can kill 160, 170 inch buck in California on an over the counter tag
Oh, yeah,
with my
that's huge.
bow, people struggle killing a 100 inch deer out here, 110 inch forky, and if I'm able to go in like absolute shit units and find a 160, 170, I'm in.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm in. And I don't see another soul. I never see anybody. Like, I never see anybody. And that's cool. It just means that there's all kinds of little places out there in the world to go explore that some people aren't willing to do. And granted, every year I work 35 to 40 days in the field before the season even starts, trying to find where the rain fell. Because, look, if you just arbitrarily try and stick a needle on a mountain and say, I'm gonna go look at this, good luck. Ain't gonna happen. If you just show up, good luck. It ain't gonna happen. And if it was luck and it was once. But consistency, you need to know exactly where the rain fell. You know exactly what part of the mountain the deer are using or what part of the flats the deer are using. And you gotta find out why they're there. Predominantly water first. You gotta know where it rained, and not just rain once when it was early in the monsoons. You got to know where follow-up rain fell and where the follow-up green fell. And you got to know why they're there. There's a lot of times you'll see a new green area and think, oh, they all got to be right there. You go in there, you won't see anything. You're like, well, why aren't they here? It's super, super green. It seems like obvious, but it's far from obvious. It's knowing why. And those are probably the most savvy survivors out there. They're way smarter than the bucks ever could be. The does are truly the survivors, and the reason why they're the survivors is they have to raise young. When they give birth, they have to, they're the ones that have to produce milk. They have to eat enough and drink enough to be able to make sure that they can take care of two or three, not just a buck, where he can just go out and survive on a couple drops of water from the plants and sit by himself in the shade and so if you really, care about learning deer behavior, you're going to care about finding the does and learning and understanding them. And when you start finding and learning and understanding them, you realize the bucks in these areas are also the ones that kind of, believe it or not, follow them. They separate themselves, but they're not that far away from each other, if that makes sense. Yeah, so they're really sophisticated animals. They're super smart, and my approach is just, making sure that I know where these areas of green are, what time the rain fell to the ground. And after, a few years, you start to see like these little subtle patterns, and those subtle patterns are what I look for more than anything else. I'm looking for patterns more than anything. And once you start picking up on things, like you go into an area, you find some fresh track, that doesn't mean that that's going to be there come opening season, but you're mentally keeping a logbook. Oh, okay, it was this time of year when they were using this area. You go back the next year, see if they were using it again. You look for patterns, and you kind of like you keep a map and a journal, and you look and you see. And my journal is in my head. I did that for fishing for years. I had all kinds of great spots to go fishing and high spots that were numbers you'd pull up and catch big deep water rockfish or whatever the case on it. And people would always want to know where my book of numbers was, and I never had one. But it's one of those things where it's important to keep a log of where you're seeing the sign, what time of year you're seeing it, and then where they're moving and how they're moving and why they're moving. And according to that feed or according to that moisture, which both of them very much so coincide with the other, you're going to start seeing your concentrations. And then the more you hone in on that come season, you're going to know exactly where you want to be, come the hunt. Generally speaking, it's not a matter of if you're gonna kill one, it's more a matter of if you're gonna find the one you want to kill. And hopefully, by doing that due diligence early on, a lot of these, great desert hunters, these guys that hunt Arizona and Nevada, and a handful of guys that hunt California and then Old Sonora, those guys, that's what they're doing. I'm not doing anything that, is different from. There's a couple of great guys out there like Jason Carter. He's just a savant at it. He's really wise at it. Travis Roundy, he's a savage. My best buddy Chad, he's probably the I think that Chad's probably one of the most, some people are catching on now, but he's probably one of the most underrated guys out there
Oh,
when it
for
comes
sure.
to
That's because he's so
knowing
shy.
what's up. Yeah, it's so funny because you know Chad, and you realize how unshy he is, but then you get him around people and he clams up, makes me laugh. But he's probably one of the better human beings I know on this earth, and a wealth of knowledge. One of those guys I love to, spend days and days out in the desert with, just checking for sign, looking for track, looking for feed, and all that kind of stuff. It really, there's You know, people I notice nowadays are you know, they want to find it on an app. They want to find
right.
statistics. They want to find something that's the aha moment that really, at the end of the day, technology is not going to give them. It's time. It's just time. There is no 1 through 5 steps to, like, lose 80 pounds, right? It's how about just work your dick off and you're going to lose the 80 pounds.
Right, exactly.
Stop eating like shit. You're going to lose 80 pounds.
Was that my problem?
It's my problem, too. God. You know, I eat more Snickers bars than I do, or, you know, Twinkies or pies. I mean, I have more pictures of Chad and I stuffing our face on shit food than we could ever freaking try and say that we eat great, because we don't. But at the end of the day, it's one of those things where, I mean, you wanna find and hunt good deer consistently. Mm. You just have to figure out a way to get away from your desk more and get out in the field more. I know you know that, but that's the funny part about modern hunting is that there is no app to make you better. There's no train to hunt that's gonna make you kill bigger bucks. You might get there faster than me, but you certainly aren't gonna kill anything more than me. Mm-hmm. And you know, everybody has their approach to it, and it's not that any of that's bad. I actually think that those are pretty rad. You know, they're pretty cool. Gets a lot of like-minded people together. It's constructive, healthy. I think there's nothing but benefit there. I'm just leaving it out there as an example from the standpoint that
there's no silver bullet
program. There's no easy shortcut. There's no secret recipe except for just working your dick off.
Yeah.
What I've
found with technology, and I'll use this in the example of, is a lot of times I have 5 days to hunt and I'm going to a place I've never been. And what I found that it helps me pick a direction. But then once you get that, pick that direction, once you the airplane lands and you drive out to where you got to do and you start hiking, everything just goes back to hard work and observation and attention to the details. Like, that's kind of, I mean, that's been my whole hunting career. I mean, really, except for when I hunt here in state, because that's the only time I can actually go and scout something is when I'm hunting here in state. But that's not like I'm going to take, it's not like I'm going to take a week off to go, you know, because Chad and I are going to Idaho. It's not like I have time to go up there this summer and go take a look and see what the hell we're dealing with. I'm doing all my homework now, looking at maps, looking at aerial, looking at this, looking at that, talking to a couple of friends, you know, calling up the biologist. And so there is something to be said about quote unquote modern hunting and some of the things that you have and the tools and resources that you have available to you. But just like you said, once you get there, it's all about what you put into it. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to put into it too. I mean, there's a lot of research that I do, you know, that we're doing to make those things happen. But
yeah, there's advantages, but you know, I mean, there's no substitute for the fact that if things aren't going your way when your boots are on the ground, it has to do with how hard your grind is.
Yeah,
a lot of people go home. I've known several people that I've seen out in the mountains that are like, you know, hey, aren't you Marlon Holden? Aren't you, you know, gray light dude? Oh man, awesome. You know, good to meet you. And you know, it's like usually at a gas station or restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, so, you know, I'm hunting here and, you know, and where you been? You know, and I told them, well, I just got out from 6 days packed in. I'm like, what? I went out overnight, you know, but it rained so hard last night, you know, I came out, wanted to get dried off and I'm cold and get some food in me. And I'm like, yeah, I hear you, but that's, we all suffer the same. You know, sometimes people who suffer the most are the ones that go home gripping and grinning. And so, a lot of people that I've met actually hang it up and go home. Miss the family. You know, they feel like, oh, I have other things that I need to be doing because I'm not seeing what I want to see. They give up. They don't cover enough country. You know, it hurts too much or too heavy or too far or whatever the case may be. There's no such thing as too heavy. There's no such thing as too far. And, you know, there's no such thing as too long. Like, keep the right attitude and keep grinding, you know what I mean? And hone yourself to where absolutely confident in the fact that you're going to get it done. That's where the magic happens. That's where things come together and, you know, you have the most fun.
Yeah.
So, that, you know, really at the end of the day, that's one of the more important aspects to me is just grinding harder. Even though I'm getting older, I grind harder.
Mm-hmm.
I grind so hard to the point that, you know, still people think I'm crazy. I don't care how much sleep I didn't get. You know, it really doesn't matter. Like, if I go to bed at midnight, I'm still waking up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock. I don't care. And I don't care if it's day 6 or if it's day 20.
Yeah, I see that all the time. Like, that wanting to sleep in and this is, and I'm like, you're not going to get something. You're not going to kill something if you're, I mean, I shouldn't say you're not, because obviously there's always anomalies, but I mean, I see it all the time. Like, it just drives me insane, especially like when we guide people, whatever, and they're like, oh, we're going to get up that early or whatever. I'm like, that's kind of what we need to do. You know, I mean, if you don't want to, we don't have to. I mean, I never force anybody, but it's just like, yeah, this is what we need to do. If you have this expectation, if you're just happy with, you know, this or this or whatever, you know, yeah, we could change things up. I get it, you know, but,
I see a nice little button forky right here that we can pull up on at 8:30. I know where I'll be.
Exactly. So, but,
that's my problem, John. My problem is that, you know, this whole transition in my life, business and decisions wise towards the future have been geared more so that way I can allow myself more time.
Yeah.
So that way I can kind of bring some maturation behind some of the goals that I've had in the field. In that, you know, I do want to hunt better areas and I want to pursue, older animals with better genetics.
Yeah. So
sometimes the gene pools just simply don't exist where I'm at.
Oh yeah,
I could get age class, but I won't find the genes. So, you know, part of this quest here is to be able to have more time and have better gene pools.
I mean, you're not going to find 200 inch deer running around an A zone. I mean, it's just
not going to happen.
Not happening.
I won't find a 200 inch deer running around in darn near most of the units that I go to.
Right.
It's an anomaly by far, an anomaly. So if I'm lucky to, you know, get a 160 or 170, I mean, he's kind of like the king hog, and I go for him. But
yeah,
there's a point in time where that's just, you know, it's a wonderful memory. It is, goes back a little bit to the conversation we had before we started recording, but it's more about, putting meat in the freezer and being a part of the process with my son and showing him the outdoors. And, you know, still caring about the hunt and everything like that. But, yeah, I definitely want to take some different steps with the progression of that. I think that, you know, to our point earlier in our conversation about going with traditional archery, I mean, which I feel is that next step, I feel like I have a couple of bucket lists. I've honed the techniques and the abilities to a point now where I'm really certain with it.
Yeah.
I would like to put down a couple of bucket list kind of animals, and that's simple as this: a giant typical and a giant non-typical.
Right.
I think you know, once I do that, I really will think a lot more seriously about just kind of hanging it up. And if I get one, I get one. If I don't, I don't. You know, I think that's a serious possibility. That's
What
highly
about
possible,
this?
Joe.
What about this? I mean, you see, you've been pretty much mule deer hunter. What about chasing another game? Did you ever think about
Nothing.
that? You know, there's no chance for passion developing somewhere else. I mean,
I don't think so.
no.
I don't
Yeah.
think so. I mean, I tried the Eastern whitetail thing a couple of falls.
Yeah, but that's like probably the least exciting. Well, no, it's not true. I mean, it's exciting to a point, but when you're a spot and stalk hunter, have you spot and stalked whitetail yet?
I spot and talk stalked a couple of coos. I've been close to them, but I had a hard time, saying I'm going to shoot this. That.
Because you got hung up on the rack, or
They're just little, and I know that genetically that's what they are. I just have, I don't want to end my hunt on even 100-inch coos deer or 105-inch coos deer. We had a buck on this one ranch that really good friends with the owner, and we stay there and everything. And he had 5x4, a 9-point coos buck. He's probably a, I'm gonna say mid 130s, possibly high
Jesus.
130s. Like one, I was saying 136, 138. Just a 22-inch wide freaking monster, heavy beams. Just eye guards were just as big as, almost just as big as his twos. It was just a very a stud. I mean, looking back on it now, I'm like, yeah, you're dumb. You should have shot that. He's a Boone and Crockett buck, kind of deal with bow.
Yeah.
He was an all-time. I'll probably never see one like it again. But to me, I was chasing a much bigger buck down the flats. I was chasing a 190 down the flats. I'm like, I'm not gonna
Right.
stand my head on this thing. Like, no way. And I was 50 yards away from it, watching it rut muley. So all I did is sit there and take pictures of it. I have pictures of it.
Gotta send me
one
those.
of
I want to see that.
the guys send the pictures to you so you can sit there and go,
Cool.
holy shit. Yeah.
Slap you
He's
when I see
dick punch me for sure, yeah. But I sat there and snapped pictures of it. And every time I tell people that, you're like, you're stupid. Like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I just didn't want to
Yeah.
shoot it. And, I have this place up in Idaho. I was telling Chad, I have this place on Winter Range up in Idaho where they have over-the-counter tags. And, I see 310 to, I saw a 370 the last year I was there by
Wow.
himself, bedded up like just below the ridge line by about 40 feet in a small patch of coulees, like big old bull. You can have chances to shoot one or two solid bulls, every day
Right.
on winter range after they migrate. And
Unreal.
yet I still won't go buy a tag for him.
Well, you need to share that with me because I need to go do that.
Okay. That could possibly happen, but I might have to kill you because it's also my deer spot.
I'm not gonna go deer hunting there. Don't worry about it. Or
But
I'll go with you. I'll go with you. I'll shoot the elk and you shoot the deer.
that could very well be a real thing, because
There you
I
go.
don't yeah I just I mean candidly I just never wanted to. The biggest thing for me is I just don't want to pack one out. I'm not interested in doing multiple trips to a big ass animal like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're, necessarily less smart or any of that. I think they're beautiful, they're regal, they're majestic, they're amazing. I just like the mono e mono of a deer. And I like how smart they are. You ever notice, John, how a truly big, mature buck, how smart they are?
I never see big bucks, so I don't know.
Oh, can't give me that crap. When you hunt a mature deer, and I don't mean inches, I just mean mature,
Right,
like
yeah, old.
heavy bases. You look at him, when he's on the ground, his teeth are down to the gums. He's smart. I've seen him where they avoid you just because of They get a feeling or something.
Yeah, instinct.
There's
just
no
like.
other, there's no other excuse for them to be gone. I mean, the
Yeah.
wind's blowing in their face. It's like electromagnetic frequency. I don't know, but I've come across deer that are so smart that they just elude me due to the fact that they're smart. They've got that sixth sense. It's not even fifth.
Yeah.
It goes well beyond sight, sound, smell. It goes well beyond it. I don't know if it's vibration in rocks and ground.
Something. Yeah.
It is definitely something. I mean, you'll see them like get up and look that direction, but there ain't no way they can hear you. There's just no
Right.
way. No way. Not a chance. And no way they can smell me either. And they definitely didn't see me. Those are the ones that I'm still after.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I still want to get.
Don't want to
And
get underneath your skin, for sure.
that whole whatever the biomechanics of that are, that's what I'm truly interested in mastering. That's
Yeah.
like an Indian skill. That's
Yeah.
an Indian skill. I don't know if I'm Indian enough to know what that is, but
Cool.
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Nah, man, I get it. Well, I feel like if you and I keep going, we'll probably go for another hour and a half here. But I think we should get on and do another podcast, like you said, something that's a little different than the norm. Just a good conversation
Yeah, no, I
of how to view or how we view. I mean, not make people view the way we view, but just kind
you know
of.
what's funny is I'm a lot more excited about that conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I could, yeah.
I'm a lot more excited about that conversation.
Well, it's you don't get to
Because
have that conversation with people really, because I mean, when you're talking hunting with people, you're usually talking like, "Oh, look at this buck," and that, and you don't know. It's like how many times you actually sit down and say, "You know, I have this feeling, or I'm battling this, or I'm whatever." You don't have that.
Yeah,
It's not a
that's it.
common, because it's a vulnerable conversation, you know. It is. It really is. I mean, if we. That first 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or whatever, that if I was recording that, I'd have to think about, like, putting that, because we had some like inside moments, like, vulnerable stuff that maybe, I mean, I'm sure there's other guys out there having the same. I mean, we obviously, you and I can't be the only two people having a conversation or having that those thoughts or whatever, but I think one of the things that scares people about that is, and if you feel that way, if you think about stuff like that, what's your justification for wanting to hunt? Then you feel like there's like another having to justify yourself another way, like, I don't know.
Sure.
I'm kind of.
I think I think that it does come full circle. I think there's a fully justified and prominent reasoning behind it. I don't think it's just a savage animalistic approach. I
Yeah.
think that it has more to do with, our part here, the necessary part,
Right.
that whether we like it or not, we are a part of. There's nobody that's gonna have leather on their belt or meat on their plate that can say otherwise. They can't. That justification is simply that, they're not connected enough to appreciate that life that they're consuming. If they want to argue otherwise, that will be a very damning argument due to the fact that they must affiliate an assassin in order to fulfill their survival. They don't have the ability to survive because of their emotions allowing themselves to be ruled and governed versus understanding how to control those emotions and do something about it. Survivors often go through that. You watch little things like Naked and Afraid, you try and see like the vegetarians that have tried to go on Naked and Afraid. Well, they tap out.
Yeah.
They tap out. It's unrealistic. It's not realistic.
No.
You're going to die. You want to go out in nature and you want to try and survive, you're going to die.
Yep.
That's the facts. You eat what you can and you eat when you can. And
right.
Be proactive about making sure you eat. So, you know, I'm not there's not one part of me that's in any way, shape, or form thinking that it's a defensive conversation. I think, if anything, it's a higher education conversation. I think it's the process of what we embrace as hunters, as our own reckoning with oneself, what that next step looks like. And, mm-hmm. and you know, compounding that in visiting with, you know, we're part of this greater cycle and a greater respect for what we do and less of a need to just go out and rack up numbers, but more important, to rack up experiences,
right,
and memories, and then, you know, be thankful to be able to nourish our bellies and have a table full of wild farm to table or organic self procured proteins. I really like that movement. That idea is a very valid and noble movement, because mm-hmm. then we're more connected. We're more connected with who we are.
Right.
You know, so the side of, yeah, I shot that fucker, and, you know, fuck, oh, yeah, you know, like,
yeah, I can't stand that.
On the fucking mountain like a you know, a half deranged lunatic. Am I excited? Yes. Do
yeah.
I feel that way? No.
No.
No. Now I'm just, you know, okay, what am I, you know, am I going to cry or, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. It's a very emotional thing, and I don't care if that's public or not. You know, to me, that's reverence. That's reverence. Reverence has to live in you. If you're a savage, then, you know, fuck you. Don't follow me. Like,
right.
I'm not interested in that. Like, you want, you know, it's kind of like a cock measuring contest. You want to go toe to toe so you can kill this buck faster. Okay, or whip your ass 10 ways till Sunday. Let's do it. Like, that's not the. And you know, there's gonna be a lot of people that don't like that, right? Oh, he's a prick, you know, he thinks he's so good.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm so good. I don't think I'm so great. I'm definitely not great. I'm a human being on this earth that enjoys the outdoors, that loves to procure his own protein, that loves to raise his son outdoors, that wants to see things with more purpose and more vigilance. It's more about, you know, what can we do for each other and what can we do for the animals that we love? And how can this continue?
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a conversation that people have. And I know that there's some really important ones that go on that are great. I think that Cam Haines and Joe Rogan and, you know, that they have a good movement with some great conversations. I've heard a few other podcasts that do some of that too. But I mean, you know, you and I need to have those conversations too.
Yeah.
Spread more of that awareness so that way, let's face it, we'll always be the minority.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. So long as the minority that we are is accepted as a positive means of understanding not only why we do what we do, but that there is a true need for it. It is a sage requirement in order for there to be a sound and substantial effort given to not only the protection and management of these animals, but also, you know, as a heritage and a culture and the need to survive, the basic right. primitive level of a need to survive that we all have.
Yeah.
I don't, call me naive, but I don't see humanity on a vegetable-based diet or any type of organically, yeah. like a green-based diet. It's not sustainable. You couldn't grow enough vegetables if every single piece of ground were covered to feed everyone.
Yeah.
It's a mix and balance of everything and allowing everybody to do what it is in a managed practice that is conducive for everything to have balance, that to me seems to have the best fit. It allows all of us to be individuals and pursue the things that are important to us.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely to be continued. We're definitely going to sit down here in the near future and hammer this out. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your insight and sharing your knowledge on the couple questions that we threw at you. But you've definitely, you know, opened up the door for some people to start thinking about some, you know, the whys and of what they do, you know? So I think, it's definitely a good conversation to have. We should, pencil one in here and have it. Cool.
It's a very important one because, I mean, our blood is no different than the blood that falls on the ground when we follow a blood trail.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, think about it. I'll be 40 in September. If I'm lucky, I'll have another 40. That's if I'm lucky. And really, at the end of the day, you know, when you're 60, people go, oh, he's done. You know,
yeah.
20 years away. And
yeah.
That's if I'm lucky. So I sit there and go, you know, maybe 40 is the new 30. Nowadays,
yeah.
I don't know, but at the end of the day, I will certainly say that have reverence in your heart. Be thankful for everything that we're given. Take nothing for granted. Don't take life without reason or purpose. Live and let live, and also, you know, be a part of the cycle by taking only what you need. And, you know, when it comes to sponsors and things of that nature, don't chase the sponsors. That's a real important message.
Yeah.
You know, as you're young and you're trying to figure all this out, focus on being a great woodsman. Focus on being a great steward. Focus on the importance of the animals. Focus on honing your love for the animals, and I guarantee you those sponsors will come crawling out of the woodwork for you. It's almost, you know, it needs to be done in reverse.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, for sure.
I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, bro. It's been a while since we got a chance to talk anyway. You've been busy. Well, good luck to the new endeavor. I'd like to come down and check it out. And,
yeah, come on down. Stay at the house. Take you to dinner.
That was good.
Some weird folks walking around. Chad's kind of people.
Chad's people, yeah.
We should send this little last snapshot to him.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome. We had a podcast about you, Chad. We talked about you the whole time. cool, man. All right, well, I'll talk with you soon. Have a good one.
All right, brother. Bye. You too. See ya. Bye.
Hey, guys. Want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcasts that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.